This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine.
It was 69 years ago this week, just after midnight on the night from the 29th to the 30th of September 1938, that the British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, his French counterpart Edouard Daladier, Hitler and Mussolini signed the Munich Agreement. The agreement is now remembered as the most notorious symbol of Chamberlain's tragically flawed policy of appeasement. His piece of paper was to be the guarantee of peace for our time, and Czechoslovakia was the price that was to be paid, as the foremost powerful men in Europe agreed to allow Nazi Germany to annex a large part of the country. The next day, German troops marched unopposed into the Sudetenland, the mainly German-speaking border regions of Czechoslovakia. Despite the popularity of appeasement in Britain, seen as a way of avoiding a repetition of the carnage of the First World War, there were also many who were horrified by the decision to leave Czechoslovakia to its fate. Among them was the young Nicholas Winton.
Nobody that I knew at that time who had thought Hitler was a menace thought that because Hitler came back with a piece of paper, the crisis was over. I think we were just incredulous.
And you went to Prague, and you found that everybody spoke to there was also incredulous.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Nicholas Winton was working at London's Stock Exchange at the time, but he was also a political idealist and an active member of the Labour Party. Just a few weeks after Hitler marched into the Czech borderlands, he made a decision that was to transform his life. He decided to travel to Prague to help refugees who had fled to the city after the Sudetenland had been swallowed up by the Reich. The subsequent story of how he was to save nearly 700 Jewish children in what became known as the Kindertransport has become legendary. At 98, Sir Nicholas Winton, he was knighted in 2002 in honour of his service to humanity, still has the energy and sharpness of wit of someone at least 30 years younger. I recently visited him at his home near London, and over a pint of beer at the local pub, we discussed politics past and present. It was hard to believe that at the time of Munich, Sir Nicholas was already nearly 30 years old. The story of the refugee crisis that followed Munich and accelerated in the months preceding the outbreak of the Second World War has many modern echoes. In this programme, through the memories of Sir Nicholas Winton and some of the children whose lives he saved, we shall be telling that story.
Die große Zeit ist jetzt angebrochen. Deutschland ist nun erwacht.
Events began to unfold in 1933 with Hitler's rise to power in Germany. At the time, Czechoslovakia seemed an island of stability, and thousands of German opposition figures fled to the country. Among them was the family of Susan Medas, who was later to become one of the children saved by Nicholas Winton.
My father was Richard Bernstein, and his job in Berlin was to be the political editor of Vorwärts, which was the party paper, Social Democrat Party.
And at that time, they were by no means the only people fleeing to Prague from Nazi Germany, were they?
No, indeed. And I believe that most of the editors of Vorwärts came to Prague at the time. Some of them went on to France, but a number of them did come to Prague. In a way, as I was fortunate enough to flee with my brother, my mother and my father, in some ways it didn't seem a very drastic change, and all I do remember is that for the whole period of the time when we lived in Prague, we encountered no anti-Semitism and no hostility whatever.
The German exiles included numerous very well-known figures, such as the Marxist philosopher Ernst Bloch, and most famously of all, the novelist Thomas Mann, author of The Magic Mountain and Death in Venice.
Ich danke Ihnen, lieber Herr Professor, aufrichtig und von Herzen für die freundlichen Worte der Begrüßung, die ich soeben zusammen mit so vielen anderen Menschen hören durfte.
Here he is speaking in a rare Czech radio archive recording from October 1936, in which he praises Czechoslovakia's continuing commitment to democracy, while much of the region slips into dictatorship.
Zusammenarbeit der Kulturen, welches so sehr der Gesinnung und den Zielen des Hauptes dieser Republik entspricht.
But Prague was living on borrowed time. Hitler was breathing down Czechoslovakia's neck, and with the Munich Agreement of September 1938, everything changed. Not just in the Sudetenland, but even in Prague itself, as Susan Medas, who was attending Prague's German grammar school at the time, remembers.
I went to school one morning, this was in October 1938, and was just going up the staircase when the girls who were standing at the top of the stairs shouted in German, "Here comes the Jewish pig." I was very surprised because prior to that, there was no difference between the Jewish and the non-Jewish children. And my parents decided, when I came home and told them this, my parents decided that I wasn't going to go back to school. I found out that on occupying the Sudetenland, the Germans had also been able to change the teachers in our school in central Prague. And I couldn't understand why until a few years ago when I learned that it was actually a private school, so that the Czechoslovak government had no jurisdiction over that.
Prague became the focal point for tens of thousands of Czechs and Germans, many of them Jewish, fleeing the Sudetenland. The result was a refugee crisis on a huge scale. The Sudetenland's new Nazi rulers were barking that once they got hold of these refugees, who were cowering, as they put it, under the protection of the Czech government, they would show no mercy. If Chamberlain had expected Munich to bring calm and stability to Central Europe, he could not have been more wrong. The Prague writer, Lenka Reinerová, remembers.
Because we've been a democratic republic and a neighbor of big Germany, we had a very big German anti-fascist emigration here. And now came this Munich, and many of those people were here. And they were immediately, from one day to the other, in great danger, because nobody knew what will happen during the next days. So it was very necessary, and there were people, there were prominent people and unknown people. And it was necessary, naturally, at that moment to bring them as soon as possible out of the country.
News of the refugee crisis reached Britain thanks to the work of several international refugee organizations active in Prague. Nicholas Winton's involvement began more or less by chance, thanks to his political engagement.
My great friend Martin Blake, who was a master at Westminster School, was also very left-wing. We had followed very closely what was going on the continent. Now, every winter, I would take a number of his pupils to winter sports. I did it because we got a free holiday. And right at the last moment we were going to winter sports, 38, he rang me up and said, "Look, I've cancelled it. I'm going to Prague. I think what I'm doing there will interest you. If you're interested, come and follow me."
And so what was he doing?
I don't think he had an actual brief of doing anything at that time. But I think if it was a brief, it was really just finding out at first hand what was going on. And I was just tagging along.
And so Prague at that time had filled with refugees who'd fled from Nazi Germany and from the Sudetenland, people who had fled for political or for racial reasons, for reasons of racial persecution.
Yes, well, of course, some of the people who arrived in Prague at that time were already two times refugees. I mean, they'd fled from Germany, from Hitler, into Sudetenland as sanctuary. And then they fled again for sanctuary from Sudetenland into Prague, and those that hadn't got friends or relatives were just put in Nissen huts. So things were pretty grim at that time.
And the work that you were doing at that time was to try and get these people out of Czechoslovakia. You realized the peace for our time that Chamberlain had talked about was just temporary. Was it clear to you and to the people you spoke to in Czechoslovakia that this situation, Arctic, wasn't going to last?
It was only clear insofar as that is what all my left-wing colleagues felt. When you map what Hitler did in marching through Europe up to the time of Sudetenland, and knowing what the position was at that time, you couldn't really feel that he was going to stop. I mean, why should he stop there when everything was working in his favour? It was fairly clear to us. And, of course, I was telling you, there were five committees in Czechoslovakia looking after these people. Now, all of them, all these five committees, had lists of children where the parents had signed that they were willing to let their children go. Now, all those people wouldn't have wanted to let their children go unless they thought that something terrible was going to happen.
Yes, because this was before even Hitler had marched into Prague in March 1939, wasn't it? Technically speaking, what remained of Czechoslovakia was a free and democratic country, technically speaking, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yes. Oh, it was before Hitler marched into Czechoslovakia.
Nicholas Winton realised that it was the children who were most in danger, and this became the focus of his work.
I was told that although there was an organisation which was trying to get out the elder people, they had no permission from the British government, and they had no means or financial means to get out the children. So I merely said that if it were possible, I would do it. And in fact, it wasn't really difficult. It was a lot of hard work. But it wasn't difficult because the Home Office made no problems at all about granting visas. The only problem was to get permits for the children to enter England and to fulfil the conditions which were laid down by the Home Office, which was that I could only bring in a child if I had a family that would look after them.
At this stage, Nicholas Winton was not working in an official capacity.
I was only in Prague on holiday from my work, and I was only there for 2 weeks, and after an awful row with my boss, I got it extended to 3 weeks. But when I came back and started bringing the children out, I was still working at my job on the stock exchange, and I was never kind of free to give 100% of my time to this, no.
The head of the British Committee for Refugees from Czechoslovakia, Doreen Warrener, had written to his employer, a merchant bank in the city of London, asking for him to be given more time off. His boss was not much impressed, writing with some sarcasm, "I would sooner you were taking a rest here rather than doing heroic work with thousands of poor devils who are suffering through no fault of their own." So Nicholas Winton ended up working for the refugees in his spare time, from his home in Hampstead, and with the help of just one secretary. Britain's Interior Ministry, the Home Office, was also not particularly helpful. Then, a few weeks later, events took a dramatic turn. On the 15th of March 1939, German troops occupied what remained of Czechoslovakia, after Slovakia had split away under Nazi pressure. Susan Medas remembers.
We were standing in Wenceslas Square when the German tanks rolled in, and people were given flags to wave because it was supposed to be, we were supposed to be happy to see the Germans coming, but there was no flag waving. On the contrary, people to the right and to the left of me were weeping. They knew, of course, very well what was in store for them.
With Prague under direct German rule, the Gestapo began rounding up anyone considered politically unreliable, starting with those who had fled previously from Germany. Anyone who was Jewish, whether they were German or Czech, was in direct peril. A growing number of Jewish families, realizing that there was little chance for the adults to escape, tried to get their children onto Nicholas Winton's lists. At this stage, Britain was not yet at war with Germany, and amazingly, the German authorities did nothing to stop Nicholas Winton continuing his work.
There was no opposition, really, opposition from the Nazis at all. I mean, there are pictures which you can see where the Gestapo were helping the children onto the trains.
The children were sent in a series of special trains to England. One of them was Susan Medas.
We arrived in England at the beginning of July, and many of us have very clear memories of Liverpool Street Station, which is now new and looks quite different. We were taken into a sort of large waiting room or drill hall. We had labels round our necks with a number, but also with our destination, like a parcel. And on my label it said Cambridge, because I was destined to go to Cambridge. And I remember that a young American student, who also spoke German, came along, and she took myself and two other much younger children to the train, and we went by train to Cambridge. I was nearly 16. I was very confident, but there was a little girl of 5 who was anything but fearless, and she could only speak Czech. So she clung to me, and when we arrived at Cambridge, the idea was that she should go straight to her foster family, a charming young couple who were at the station to meet her. But she wouldn't let go of my hand, and so I was asked whether I would mind if we first went to that family. I didn't mind at all. And we got to the house. The people were so nice, and the little girl was sweet, and they had prepared her room with friezes and toys and everything else, but she wasn't letting go of my hand. And eventually they had a teddy bear, and they showed it to her, and she had to let go of my hand to hold this toy. And then the young American girl motioned to me that perhaps it was time that we left. And then my new foster parents came to collect me, and it was so embarrassing for them as well as for myself, because they were a newly married couple, and they were kissing and cuddling, and there I was in the same room with them. And I didn't stay with this family very long, because I knew that there was a refugees committee, and I went to the refugees committee to a remarkable woman called Greta Birkhill, who found another family for me.
Susan Medas had originally come from Germany, but many of the other children were from Czech Jewish families. Among them were Alice Klimova and Ruth Rudsova, both of whom we have interviewed in the past on Radio Prague.
My sister was too old. She was already 16, so I went instead of her. This is how I got onto the children's transport. By pure coincidence, my sister managed to get on the next transport also, so that we managed to be there both. And she was more than a sister. She was more a mother to me. And I was very fortunate to have her there, because absolutely nobody of the family survived.
I was 7. At the time, it was July 1939. I don't remember much about the journey. It was a train journey and then on the boat. I do remember standing on the platform, probably Victoria Station, with a big label on a piece of string round my neck with my name. And then somebody claimed me, a strange couple, elderly people, with a grown-up daughter, and a strange thing. We never have tea with milk here. And I never drank tea with milk, and they took me to for a cup of tea. They offered me a cup of tea, and I said yes, but I didn't want milk. And then it was this strange, black, thick stuff. It was horrible. I couldn't put sugar in it, and it still tasted terrible. So that was my first experience of English tea.
Back in Prague, the children's parents faced a grim future. Susan Medas.
I got to England at the beginning of July, and war didn't break out until the 3rd of September. So it was the whole of July and the whole of August. And during that time, I received some postcards and letters from my parents in Prague. That stopped, of course, as soon as the war broke out. And to my great surprise, in January 1940, I received a postcard from my father from Oslo in Norway. And I couldn't understand what my parents were doing in Norway, but I found out again many years later that the Czechoslovak Red Cross had managed to get out of Czechoslovakia some of these German anti-Nazis who were most threatened, who had been refugees from Germany already. So my parents were in Oslo, but unfortunately when the Germans occupied Norway, my parents were taken to Auschwitz, where they died.
Like Susan Medas, Alice Klimova didn't find out about the fate of her parents until after the war.
It didn't sink in, actually, what happened. Only slowly after I had my first child, I realized what it means not to have parents, that means grandparents for my children, somebody to lean on, to have a background, and that's why I said my sister, she was always such a brick and such a...
And nobody survived from your family?
Absolutely nobody.
I don't think any of them survived, perhaps an occasional one or two. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's a tragedy. On the other hand, it does prove that we took the right children out, doesn't it?
The story of the children's transports has another tragic twist. All through the summer of 1939, the transports continued. But on the 1st of September, Germany invaded Poland. 2 days later, Britain declared war on Germany.
My work stopped the day war broke out. I mean, we had 250 children on Wilson Station on the 3rd of September, which was our biggest transport, and war broke out and it was all over. Nothing more that could be done. The only thing that stopped the work of saving children in 39 was the war itself.
Did any of those children survive?
I'm told they didn't. I occasionally hear stories of one or two whom they say had been on that train who did survive. But I don't know.
I'm sure there are some people missing on the list.
Well, she remembers my sister.
Oh, that comes from Mr. Winter.
But 669 children were saved, and many are still alive today, now in their 70s and 80s. When I joined a group of the children at a gathering in Prague in 2002, I found it deeply moving. Many have gone on to become high achievers, like the journalist Joe Schlesinger, the writer Vera Gissing, filmmaker Karel Reis, who died 5 years ago. But what is perhaps still more moving is to think that Nicholas Winton's children today have their own children and grandchildren, all of whom are alive today in defiance of the insane logic of the Holocaust. Altogether, they number about 5,000 people.
And that special program was prepared by David Vaughan. Join us again for our regular program.